So welcome to this second day of the meditation retreat, second full day. Yesterday in the morning talk, where I usually focus on the techniques and skills of meditation, I gave the general outline of getting the mind to be still, making it nice and peaceful, so that through stillness the mindfulness can increase, the wisdom increases and the happiness increases. But as somebody asked in the questions last night, just actually give more instructions on how to keep the mind still, or how to not make the mind still, I use my words very carefully, how to allow the mind to be still. Because that's a natural state of the mind, to be still. Yesterday I gave the simile of the glass of water, but Ajahn Chah's simile would be, he would raise his hand. He said, my hand is like a leaf on a tree. You see the leaf flutter, go up and down. But he said, that's only because there's a wind that the leaf moves. And he said, if there was no wind, then the leaf would move less and less and less, until the leaf would come to its natural state, which will be one of stillness. The natural state of a leaf is to be still. It only moves because of the wind. In the same way, the natural state of your mind is to be still. It only moves because of the winds of desire and craving and wanting and struggling and striving. That's what makes it move. So now you're faced with the problem. Your mind is moving, so what should you do next? Stop. You just make it move more. So what you need to do is to protect the mind, to make sure that you don't interfere with it. You leave it alone. And then if you really are leaving your mind alone, you're not interfering, it moves less and less and less and less until it comes to its still place. Because that's its nature, to be still. It only moves because we interfere with it. But it's such a difficult thing to be able to observe without interfering. You just have to go into the kitchen and do some work there, and you all got your ideas on how you can make that kitchen better, on how you can organize the retreat better, on how you can make your room better, on how you can do everything better. It is the nature of human beings. As soon as they observe with a judgmental mind, and they want to fix it up and make it better. That's called the problem of civilization. You can only leave things alone for a while, it would be much more peaceful. So here we have to learn how to leave things alone with a non-judgmental mind. In other words, a non-fault-finding mind. It is one of the little words which the Buddha used in the suttas, which was translated so accurately as the fault-finding mind. And unfortunately, the way we've been educated and trained is always to pick out the faults in things. And once there is a fault, then there's something to be done. In other words, there is activity. It's only when you have a mind which is not fault-finding, which says, ah, this is good enough, this will do, and then you can be at peace. You don't have to do things. And because of that, one of my favorite sayings to people, if you want to tattoo anything on your body with a Buddha's tat, it is the saying, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. That's a wonderful way of living life, because one of these nights you will die. And all that stuff you got out of the way for tomorrow morning is a complete waste of time. You died. So never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. In other words, take a rest. Don't go fixing up things. Be more peaceful, more accepting of life. Now, to be more peaceful, more accepting of life, and not seeing the faults, that's the only way that you can rest. So look, I was responsible for building this center. I know all the bricks which are crooked, all the bricks which are stained, all the things which are wrong in this place. because I was responsible for it. I know all the, I don't know if you've seen the mistake in this floor, there's one corner which is out. But of course, you know, I built it, so I know exactly where that is. But if you can find that corner, bad meditator, that means you're another fault finder. Leave it alone, it's good enough. It's good enough to sit on. Your hut is good enough to sleep in. You know, the food is good enough to eat. It's just good enough. So don't be so proud and demanding in nature, as we've been chanting. Just be contented and easily satisfied. Which, this is what we chant in the morning. That's why we chant it in the morning. It's called brainwashing. Morning and evening, chant, 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 until it gets into you. So, be contented and easily satisfied, not proud or demanding in nature, which means you take things easy, which means you can be with things rather than always changing things. And I mentioned yesterday, a key point of this meditation is learning how to be here, not going places, certainly not fixing things up, but being here. And to be here, you have to have that degree of contentment. Now, that's so important when you get to these different levels of meditation or stages of meditation. I've already said in passing that when you let go on the path to stillness, there are many landmarks of stillness. These are not attainments, these are landmarks which show you how still you're becoming. And those landmarks are present moment awareness. In other words, you're still enough that time vanishes. You're not interested in the future. You're not concerned about the past. It's all gone. You're just here in this present moment. Sounds very easy, doesn't it, just to be here in this moment. But it's so difficult to do. And the reason is because when we do have some present moment awareness, we're too fault-finding about it. We're not content to be here. Yeah, we're here, but it doesn't feel good. It doesn't look nice. There's something wrong with it. So because we're not content being here, that's why we go somewhere else. All restlessness, all movement of the mind begins with discontent. Not happy to be here. And that keeps you moving. The Buddha called it the itch. It's a very famous simile which Ajahn Chah used to say so many times. He said it was the dog with the mangy coat. And that dog went out into the sun, thinking that being in the sun would actually get rid of the itch. And it didn't work, so then it went in the shade and it was still itching. And then it went into the water and it was still itchy. Then it went into a cave, and then it went here, then it went there. Whatever it went, it took the itch with it. And that's, you know what that itch is? That itch which, I can't sit still, I can't be still, I have to do something, I have to go somewhere. It's the itch of the mangy mind. Which stops you just staying here. And a way to overcome that is to learn a bit more contentment. This is good enough. You know, I don't need anything. Just, look, you're on a retreat, you're here. Enjoy this place, enjoy every moment of it. And if you can enjoy every moment, it means there's no reason to go off into the future or the past. There's no reason to go up into fantasies or to sleep, because you're enjoying every moment. You're embracing every moment. I gave a simile, because it's very hard to think up similes which explain the experience of meditation. But this was the simile which I came up with of present moment awareness and how it develops. Using the ancient metaphor, the well-used simile of life being a journey, it's like you've been on this journey, always moving, always going somewhere, never really being able to be still. And you look for a place just to stop and take a rest. It's called a present moment. It's like finding this bumpy, cold stone bench somewhere. It's not comfortable, it's not sort of pleasant, it's the only place you have, so you sit down on it. That's called the present moment. when you first stop the past and stop the future and come here, it's not pleasant at first. It's bumpy, uncomfortable, cold. But you stay there. This is good enough. And as you stay there, it seems that that stone bench becomes even. It warms up. And the hard stone turns into a soft cotton mattress. The longer you stay there, the more comfortable it feels. And that's very similar to what happens in the present moment. When you first come here into this moment, it's not that pleasant. You just have to be non-fault-finding, develop contentment, learn how to be here, and don't sort of demand it to be different. And after a while, it settles down, and it becomes very comfortable. The longer you stay in the present moment, the more pleasant it becomes, and the easier it is to stay here. That's just the way it works. Just the same way as staying with a friend. This is the friend simile. You know what it's like if you call a friend up and invite them for a cup of coffee. So you call your friend and say, "Are you free this afternoon?" They say, "Yeah." So why don't you come out for a cup of coffee with me? Now I want you and I to go to Starbucks, not Gloria Jean's, not the Coffee Bean, not anywhere else, just the Starbucks. And I want you to sit in my table, not your table. I like to sit in the corner around the back, not in the front where people can see me. And I also, you're going to drink a cappuccino, not a flat white, not a latte. You're just going to have a cappuccino with soy milk, not fat milk, not low fat milk, with soy milk, because that's what I like. And there's going to be no sugar. And you're going to eat a muffin, not a biscuit, because I like the muffins, and not just a chocolate chip, a vanilla muffin, because that's what I like. And we're going to talk about Buddhism, because that's what I like. I know you're a Christian, but I don't care. We're going to talk about Buddhism. We're going to stay there for 2 hours, because that's the time I have, not longer, not shorter. Now, would you ever call up a friend and say that? And if you did, what would they say back? I'm busy. Sorry, I can't come. I've got something else to do. That's not how you treat a friend, is it? But that's how you treat your mind. Come on, you're going to sit meditation. You're going to sit for 1 hour. No more messing around. And you're not going to do your meditation. You're going to do my meditation. You're going to watch the breath, okay? You're not going to watch sort of the body. You're not going to do vipassana. You're going to watch the breath, because that's what I'm telling you to do. And you're going to do it for 1 hour. And this is the way you're going to do it. You're not going to do it the way that someone else did. This is the way you're going to do it. No wonder your mind runs away. As soon as it sees you coming, it goes off to hide somewhere. In sloth and torpor, restlessness, or just fantasies. Because you haven't treated it like a good friend. So instead you see the mind say, "Hey, how about, are you free the next hour? Do you want to hang out together?" And the mind says, "Well, where?" I say, "Oh, wherever you want to go." And if you do that, of course your mind will want to hang out with you. Just like somebody calls you up and say, "Hey, you free this afternoon?" I say, "Yeah, why?" "Do you want to come out for a cup of coffee, a cup of tea if you like? Where do you want to go? Where do you want to sit? What do you want to drink? What do you want to talk about?" And of course, that's a good friend. You like being with such people. So now you know why your mind gets very restless sometimes. It runs away because you treated it badly. So in order to have the mind be with you, especially the present moment, treat the present moment with respect. Whatever the present moment wants to show you, let it show you that. It could be an ache, it could be a pain, it could be a pleasant feeling, it could be a thought, it could be a sound. Just respect the present moment. Treat it as a friend. And then the present moment will relax with you. And it will stay there with you. One of the whole reasons why people have difficulty in meditation, because they are control freaks. Control is the opposite of friendship. Real friendship, you don't control your friend. You just hang out with them, you respect each other, you love each other, and you have this beautiful harmony. And that's how we should deal with all these objects of meditation, with friendship. Kalyanamitta, the good friend. You be the good friend to every meditation object you have, and then it stays with you. So you stay with the breath, stay with the present moment, you're friendly with it, you're kind to it, doesn't matter what it is, so that's good enough for me. It's a lumpy old sea, but that's good enough. It's a bit unpleasant, but you're friendly with it. Then you find that present moment stays with you. This stays a long time. You don't have to control or force. It just likes you because you've been kind to it. So this is how we develop that sustained awareness of the present moment. Not through force and willpower. That never works. The more force, the more willpower, the more the present moment and everything else runs away from you. You do it with this beautiful kindness and respect. In particular, to value the present moment. Because whatever your mind thinks most important and valuable, that is what will occupy the mind. If you are really convinced that planning your future and figuring out what you're going to do next is really essential, you won't be able to stay in the moment. If you're of the opinion that you really have to figure out what happened earlier on in your life or yesterday, then the past being more important is what will occupy your mind. But if you convince yourself that this present moment is more important than anything else, and you give it such high value, then the past or the future won't be able to come into your mind at all. Isn't it really important to be now? How much of your life have you wasted? Because you've never really been here. You've been off in the future chasing your dreams. But when you get to our age, you found the dreams outrun me. I couldn't really catch up to them. They're way ahead, they're somewhere. No way can I catch them now. You've been chasing your dreams, or you've been lingering in the past, but you've never really been here. So in this retreat, to be here, present moment awareness, value it. It's really, really important. Much more important than this past or this future business. So by valuing the present moment, doing a marketing campaign to yourself, selling the present moment, then the present moment stays with you. You're respecting it, you're valuing it, you're being friendly to it, and it stays. I often tell people, just if you do that much for a few days, just being here, you have such a wonderful time. Number one, because most of the business, the worries, the anxieties, the guilt, the grief, all the problems of human beings, 99% of them live in the past or the future. And if you're in the present moment, you get so free. It's like getting out of jail. It's like Ajahn Chah's simile of this man who was born with a rope tied around his neck. And he was being pulled by these two invisible demons. And because he was born with this rope around his neck and grew up with a rope around his neck and was used to being choked, he thought it was normal. But then one day these two demons, whose names, by the way, were past and future, choking you. And after a while, those two demons, you took your body to a meditation retreat and you heard all these teachings, and those two demons fell asleep. They let go. No past, no future. For the first time in your life, you could breathe properly. There was no constriction on your throat. Oh, that's so nice. That's what it's like to let go of the past and the future. And to be right here in this present moment. So to emphasize this present moment, when you are doing walking meditation, what part of the foot is moving right now? It's not where you're going. It's what's happening right now. How do you feel right now? When you're eating your food, what's in your mouth right now? It's called the one spoon at a time practice. Because, as a monk pointed out a long time ago, usually, if you look at people eating, they've got one piece of food in their mouth which they're chewing. There's another one on their spoon, waiting in line. There's one which is heaped up, number three. And they're also sort of sorting out what they're going to have after that third morsel of food. They're about four or five morsels in front of themselves. No wonder they're not really enjoying the food they're tasting now, because they're thinking what's going to come in there next. No wonder people get indigestion. So, one spoon at a time, or fork or chopstick, whatever you use, you pick up that food, you put it in your mouth and you taste it. You're mindful of every taste, and only when it's swallowed do you even think of what you're going to put on your spoon next. So don't keep one spoon waiting there while you're eating it here. That is too far ahead of yourself. And you'll find, because your mindfulness, your awareness is fully on the food you're eating, one spoon at a time, it means that there's more joy in the food and more saliva, whatever else comes out. You digest it more. So you get much better digestion. One spoon at a time. And when you're listening to a talk, you just listen to a talk. When you're walking out of here, remember, a lot of times we miss the present moment because a lot of our life, we're in what I call the in-between moments of life. You're not walking meditation, not sitting meditation. You're going from one to the other. And a lot of times in those in-between moments of life, we're never there. We're either lingering where we began or we're already at the destination. We don't know how to be mindful in between. So when you finish your meditation or this talk finishes and you're going, say, to have a cup of tea, when you're going to have a tea, that's an in-between moment. Be there when it happens. Enjoy it. Be mindful of the in-between moments of life. When you finish your cup of tea and you're going to the toilet, you're in between the dining room and the toilet. It's another in-between moment. Be there. And those beautiful in-between moments of life. And then later on in your life when you go back home, you left home and you're going to work in the car or in the train or something, you're another in-between moment. Enjoy that, because most of your life is in-between things. And if you don't know how to respect the in-between moments of life, most of our life disappears. We're not there when it happens. Because that's what happens. Most of our life we've left somewhere, we're going somewhere. Right here, right now, is called in between. And that's the most important part of your life. So then you can actually learn how to be in this present moment. It's so many times of your life, just being here and valuing it. Again, many of the obstacles and problems have disappeared. It may happen in your meditation, especially later on in this retreat. You're getting very, very deep and you see these beautiful lights of great blisses and amazing things happening. I know what people keep asking me. They say, I got to this stage, what should I do next? I feel like getting the bonger up and bong him on the head. What do you mean next? There is no next, okay? No next. It's now. Now, now. If that question comes up, what should I do next? Now the red flag comes up. There is no next. The question is never, what should I do next? It's, what am I doing now? Present moment awareness, okay? So many people, they wreck their meditations. They come so close to getting into a deep meditation, and they wreck it when they say, what should I do next? They lose the attention on the present moment. Just right now, it's all you ever have. You should know that. Be here, right in this present moment. A lovely way of doing that, if you have difficulties, go outside and listen to the sounds. The hum of the aircon. The sound of the birds. There's so much things happening right now. When you really get into it, it really opens up, and it's amazing what's happening right now. Crack of the steel roof, the laughter of the yogis. It's all happening right now. So you're here and you're with it. And because the past and the future disappears, and so much business disappears, you get to that first stage of stillness. The mind isn't moving backwards and forwards in time. You got still, present moment. That is the first signpost of stillness. You're actually here. The next signpost. Actually, you don't really need to do these things. It just happens naturally. You just get more and more into this present moment. And if you get very deep into this present moment, you get what we call the silence of the mind. Because right in the center of this moment, there's no space to put a word. There's no opportunity for a conversation. Have you ever noticed that your conversations are just comments about what has just happened? Just like it may be a commentary on some sports match on TV. They don't give a live commentary. They describe what's just happened a second or two ago. Which, if you've got a pair of eyes, you've already seen for yourself. I told people to try this as a little experiment. It's actually, if you're, say, watching a cricket match, you watch the cricket match, say it's Australia versus Sri Lanka. You watch the Sri Lankan version of that cricket match and listen to the commentary from the Sri Lankans. And you listen to the commentary from the Australians. You would think you're watching two different matches. Because the commentators are always biased. And that's just, you two are biased. Your commentary is not the truth. It's biased. That's why all this thinking business never gets you to the truth. It just gets you more and more confused. And unfortunately, too many people believe the words so much, they forget the truth. And the usual simile which I give for this is, where did I give this? Oh, this, yeah, this was actually at Armadale a couple of nights ago. It was the story of the professor. There was a professor of philosophy. Say, okay, I said from Perth last time. A professor of philosophy from Colombo in Sri Lanka. And this professor of philosophy, he liked his food. And so when he heard there was a new 5-star restaurant opening up in Colombo on the Gaul Road, he made a booking for the restaurant. But when he rang up, he had to wait a whole month before he could get a reservation. It was such a popular restaurant. But he put his name down for a reservation. 30 days later, he dressed in a beautiful suit and he went to that restaurant and he showed his ID, and the maitre d' at the door looked at it, checked, said, "Yes, sir, you have a reservation tonight. Come in." So he got taken into this exclusive 5-star restaurant. And the maitre d' sat him down on this beautiful table, you know, with chandeliers and beautiful decor and everything. And then this waiter came in, you know, the full works, you know, tails and beautiful bow tie, very, very sharp, and gave him the menu. And the menu was on this thick parchment with calligraphy in gold. I mean, absolutely exquisite. It should be in some British museum somewhere. It was so beautiful. And the professor said, "Thank you." And the professor then ate the menu and paid and left. Because the professor, he didn't know the difference between the words and the food. Poor professors. They always get a very, very hard time in Buddhism. That's why a professor of Buddhism is a bit of an oxymoron. But anyway, there's a few around. So you can see what I'm talking about there. The menu, that's the thoughts in the mind. That's all the descriptions. And we take that to be the food. But of course it's not. And if you keep eating the words and eating all the ideas, you are just as stupid as that professor and you'll never eat any delicious food. So put the menu aside and start eating the food. So you're here, you don't think what it tastes like, you know what it tastes like. You don't think, what is that sound? You know that sound. You don't give things names, you experience them before the name even comes up. Then if you value that real experience rather than this commentary, soon you'll get very, very silent. And then, I mean, you're really getting into some deep stuff. In a moment, silence. My goodness, you know, you're way on the journey. So, if you find it difficult to stop this mind inside, always giving a commentary, There are some tricks to do that. One of them is Valium, but we haven't got we haven't got into that today. No, being serious now. One of the things is actually to go out and listen to sounds. Especially in the forest, because there's usually so many sounds around, whether it's the sound of someone dropping something, or the sound of people laughing, or the sound of the birds, or the sound of something. Because the sound only happens in this present moment, only happens now. And it stops the mind thinking. So the sound is a great thing to focus on, especially in a forest. That really shuts you up. You can be having this great conversation with yourself, and you go out and hear some birds, and they stop you. Sound is a beautiful thing. But if that doesn't work, you developed a mantra meditation. A mantra meditation is a group of words you say to yourself over and over again. You know, just like in the Thai one was Buddho, Buddho, Buddho. The most famous one, you know, is the Tibetan Om Mani Padme Hum mantra. There's so many other different mantras you can use. So I'm going to actually employ the Om Mani Padme Hum mantra here. You can use whatever you like, but this is the example. So if you do like an Om Mani Padme Hum mantra, this is in order to stop that inner conversation. You repeat it to yourself over and over and over again. But the most important part of this exercise is to put spaces between the words. So don't just go Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. You do Om Mani Padme Hum.
What?
Om Mani. You're not caretaker now. You're just listening. Om Mani Padme. Oh, put spaces between the words. And if your mind is really restless, got lots and lots of thoughts going on, close up those gaps. Om Mani Padme. Om. Om. So that the thoughts don't have a space to get in. And as you start to settle down and get more and more peaceful, Om Mani, you can lengthen the spaces between the words. And as you really get peaceful, Om Mani, really long spaces until you don't need the words at all, you've just got the silence. That's a very skillful means of working from a mind which is very restless with lots and lots of thoughts, lots of thinking going on, using the Buddha's technique of substitution, putting another group of words together, you know, to block out the thinking. And then just putting spaces between the words, opening up those spaces until the words have disappeared and you've just got the silence. It's a very skillful means of learning how to have a quiet mind. But of course, as everybody knows, you have to want to be quiet before you'll be quiet. A lot of times that technique doesn't work because people don't want it to work. They want to think. They like their thinking. They cherish their thinking. They're attached to their thinking. They believe their thoughts are so wise and so clever and so smart. So come on, be real. Be honest. Fess up. You know, your thoughts are mostly stupid, the same as mine. You've been thinking all your life, where's it ever got you? In a lot of trouble, that's all. So shut up. So take away the value of thinking and put it onto silence, and then the silence will grow. Now imagine how still you are now. You're not moving into the past or the future, and this mind is not sort of agitated with thinking. It's just here. In this moment, aware. Now, one of the reasons why people can't remain in that stillness is because they get afraid. They're not quite used to being here when nothing's happening. when you're in the moment and you're still and there's nothing going on. Which is why I now want to introduce the three levels of every stage of meditation. It helps you understand how you develop these stages. The first level is what we call recognition. You recognize what we mean by the present moment. You recognize what silence is. That's why last night I gave you that exercise when I was speaking and asked you to be aware of what was happening inside of you when I put these pauses in. That was silence. So you could actually recognize what we mean by the silent mind. You experienced it. You know, when I stopped speaking, before the next word began, in that pause, that was the silent mind. So you experience it so you can recognize it. After you've recognized it, that's the first stage of every meditation, recognition. You experience it again and again and again and again until you get to the stage of familiarity. You're familiar with it. Oh, it's the silence again, which means you don't interfere with it anymore. It's just a friend. It's just someone you can relax with. And after familiarity comes the final stage of ease. You can relax totally with that silence or present moment. But you find in every stage of meditation you have to go through those three levels: recognition, familiarity and ease. Same when you first come here. Many of you have been here several times, so it's like a second home. You know this place. You know me. You relax with me because you have fun. I tell jokes, you tell jokes. We have a good time together. But when you first come and see me, my goodness, it's a monk. My goodness, it's a famous monk. My goodness, you get tense. And when you recognize, and recognize and recognize, then you get familiar, 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 then you get at ease. Or when you go to a new job, you go to a new job, a new place of work, you're really tense when you first go there because you don't know where you're going, what you have to do. You can't recognize anything. But after a few days, you get familiar, and after a week or a month, you know, it's just a second home to you. You're at ease again. You relax. And that's what you have to do with every stage of meditation, to recognize it, develop familiarity until you're so at ease with it. And the sign you're at ease with these stages is they remain with you for a long time. Present moment stays with us for such a long time, you feel so comfortable with it, it stays with you. You're so comfortable with silence. It stays a long time. You don't feel you need to interfere with it. It's the fear. You're not really at ease with this. It's the fear which disturbs the stillness. So with recognition, familiarity and ease, it overcomes the fear. And these stages stay with you for a long period of time. Now already, just being silent in the moment, you know it's a lot of fun. It's a case of all these burdens of my life, all these difficulties, all these things which have been worrying me have just disappeared for a while. Oh, what a relief. It very much is like going on holiday. Going on holiday, getting away from it all, they used to say. And when they go on holiday, they don't get away from it all, they get more of the same. When you really go on holiday, you go on holiday to see your relations in Sri Lanka. Oh my goodness, what a stupid thing to do. That's not a holiday, that's torture. And I did that once. I went 7 years as a monk, I went to go and see my family for Christmas. I forgot what a family was like. As soon as you meet together, they all say, "Oh, Merry Christmas, how are you? What have you been doing?" And that lasted about 15 minutes, and then the argument started. Welcome to family life. Oh my goodness. So no, to really get away from it all, even if you go to some beach somewhere, there's always sand flies or something around. So when you come to the present moment and come to silence, it's just so peaceful, so nice. You really relax. Of course, I think this time last year, or just maybe last November or April, this one lady came on a retreat, had to beg from her boss in Sydney to come here. Now she managed to get permission, came here. And when she went back, she wrote me this letter saying, "When I went back to work on a Monday morning, my boss said, 'What have you been on? What sort of drug, what amphetamine did they give you down in Perth? But whatever it was, please bring me back some next time.'" She was so rested, so relaxed, and the boss saw that. So this actually does work. present moment awareness and silence, you're becoming still. Now what happens next is you want to start, it actually happens naturally, because when you're in the present moment and silent and you're sitting down, nothing much is moving except what? You've got your eyes closed, so there's no sound, so there's no sight. You're in a room and everybody's quiet, I hope. If you do come in and go out from this room, please don't make any noise, because somebody might be meditating and getting very, very, very close to the jhanas, just that far away from enlightenment, and you make a noise. Oh, that's very bad karma. Oh, I wouldn't like to be in your shoes when you... So now, if you come in and go out, please, you have to practice what we call the burglar practice, or burglar meditation. You know what burglar meditation is? You've got to imagine you're a burglar coming to a house at night. You open that door, no one hears you. You close it and no one hears you. You step like a ballet dancer. No one hears your step. Because if someone hears you, you're going to get caught and put in jail for a long time. And you sit down on the seat without any sound. You get up without any sound. So at the very least, you know, one thing you will learn in this retreat is how to rob houses without being caught. You learn that, but you won't do that, of course. Either that or you get a good job with the CIA or ACO or MI5, wherever country you come from. You'll be able to come and go silently. But at least try that so you don't make a noise. So when you come in and out of the room, remember it's a burglar meditation, not the elephant meditation. Okay. Stamp, stamp, stop, stop. So you're sitting here and nothing is moving. There's no sound, no smell, no taste. The thing which you notice was always moving is your breath going up and going down. I always wondered why the Buddha said that we should do the breath meditation. And I realized that it just happens anyway. Whether you decide to watch it or you don't decide to watch it, when everything else disappears, the only thing left moving is your breath. So it's very common that when you get into the present moment and become silent, nothing is moving, the one thing which isn't still is your lungs, your abdomen, taking in air and expelling air. So quite naturally that becomes the focus of your meditation. If you want to jump the gun, yeah, you can invite the breath in. But again, if you're going to be watching your breathing, please treat your breath as a friend. Never control the breath, because then it gets very uncomfortable. So treat the breath like a beautiful friend. So I imagine myself holding my breath's hand, not clutching it, not leading it on a sort of a leash, but treating it like a good friend. It can come in whichever way it likes coming in. It can go out how it likes to go out. I will not force or control it at all. If it's rough, if it's smooth, that's the breath's business. My job is just to be with it. And how you watch the breath? Unfortunately, meditation teachers have caused so much problems and difficulties telling people what they know how to do naturally. So when I have a new meditator and I teach them the breath meditation, all I do is tell them, close your eyes, breathe in and out 3 times and then open your eyes again. That's all the instructions I give. And then I ask them, how did you know you were breathing in? How do you know I'm breathing out? They know the breath has gone in. They know the breath has gone out. You don't have to watch at the tip of the nose, at the belly, at the ear, at the big toe. I don't care where you watch the breath. As long as you know the breath is going in, as long as you know it's going out, that's all. Keep it natural. Because I used to have hay fever. Still got hay fever. So sometimes I was meditating and they told me to watch the tip of my nose. But watching the tip of the nose, nothing was happening there. My nose was stuffed. It was blocked. Nothing going in, nothing going out. What a waste of time that was. And I thought I could meditate. And then the Mahasi method came up. And you told you can watch the breath at your abdomen. I thought, now I can meditate. I can watch the breath of the abdomen. But that time I was a young monk. And it's not a good idea to watch your abdomen late on in the afternoon or in the evening when you haven't eaten since 11 o'clock. Because that abdomen is so close to your tummy. I was watching my abdomen, but the mindfulness went to my tummy. I'm hungry. I want something to eat. I'm empty. Oh. So even watching the abdomen is not a good idea. So what do you watch? You don't have to watch the abdomen. You don't have to watch the nose. It's not nose meditation. It's not belly meditation. It's breath meditation. What's the breath? The breath, the breath. So all I needed to do, ask myself, am I breathing in, am I breathing out? I know what that is. I don't care where it's located. And it was really, really important for me to have that good karma of having hay fever and a stuffed nose. So from the very early time, I just watched the breath wherever it happened to be. Not fix it onto one point. In fact, not fix it onto the body at all. I just knew the breath going in, knew the breath going out. It made it very, very simple. And if ever I lost the breath, I asked myself, am I breathing in, am I breathing out? I could always answer that question. And how I knew I was breathing in, how I knew I was breathing out, that sensation was the sensation of the breath. That was what I watched. I made it so clear and so simple. But the important point was, I did a lot of present moment awareness and silence before I even started watching the breath. In these days, people meditating on the breath, they go to the breath far too quickly, which means the only way they can keep aware of the breath is through force. And so they never get sort of peaceful, they just get tense. And it gets unpleasant. They never get any success in meditation. Not the peace, not the happiness, not the bliss. Because they go to the breath too quickly. So you develop present moment awareness and silence. And then when the breath comes up, or you choose the breath, it's so easy to watch. Because there's nothing else going on. And you watch the breath go in and watch the breath go out. And again, just like the simile of the stone bench, yeah, it's a bit uncomfortable at first, but the longer you sit on that bench, the more comfortable and more pleasant it becomes. And again, that's again what happens with the breath. When you first watch, it's just going in, going out. But after a little while, it fills the mind, and it's a very beautiful object to watch. The reason it's beautiful, because you're going more and more still, less and less problems in the mind. All the energy goes into one thing. It brightens up. It gives you energy. It gives you joy. After a while, the mind wakes up. You see this breath going in, going out, going in, going out, having a wonderful time. That becomes an important part of the meditation. When the breath turns into what I call the delightful or the beautiful breath. It's just a natural thing which happens in the same way that when you go slow up the hillside, what you see is more beautiful. When you're doing lots of meditation, the food tastes delicious, as well as the contents of your toilet bowl. And because you're not flushing anything, there's lots of beautiful things to watch today. So, if that looks beautiful, imagine what your breath looks like. It's just a natural part of the meditation. You get to the stage of a delightful breath. You're just watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out. Having such a delightful time. The delight is the last ingredient which really makes you still. Nothing moves because you don't want to move. You don't want to get up from your seat. You don't want to go out for lunch. You don't want to do anything. You're just so happy being here, watching this breath go in and breath go out. It becomes delightful. And when you get to that stage of the meditation, then you're taking off. From there you really get some beautiful meditations. The delight's coming up, you don't have to do anything, you're sitting there with a big smile on your face. Happy, no effort, totally content, in yourself, having a wonderful time. And it really gets into some very nice states after that. But that is going to come later. So that's how you become still doing the sitting meditation. That's how you become still doing the walking meditation. Again, you just notice the feeling of the walking. Just like you know that the breath is going in, the breath is going out, you know the left foot is moving, the right foot is moving. You start from that, and then after a while you start to see all the different types of the, all the different parts of just one step. The left step, the right step, just a whole series of incredible movements and feelings of just walking. And you're not forcing it, you're doing it totally naturally, you're just walking and you're just watching the body doing the walking. Now one of the experiences you have, it's one of the nice experiences of walking meditation, you walk, 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 backwards and forwards, and after a while, you know, you're not doing the walking anymore. It's just like, you know, you're just watching this body, and I'm not doing this. You're just walking, it turns around all by itself and walks back again. It's as if, you know, you get those experiences of you just watching this body doing its thing. And really, you're not giving any command, not giving any orders, it does it all automatically. And that's really weird. It just gives you some indication of what this no-self business is. You really think you're in control, but you ain't. So that's one of the stages to look forward to. You're walking there and you're not doing it, you're just watching. It becomes very peaceful and very joyful. The less you have to do, the more happiness you have. And this is what happens in meditation. You do less and less and less. And you get more and more mindfulness, more and more energy, more and more power. And you have a great time. So that's how to be still. So just to sum up the stages of meditation today, it just happens naturally, just present moment awareness, the silence, just watching the breath and getting into the delightful breath. So this is see what happens. Don't force it. Because remember, if you want it to happen, it never does. Present moment awareness is number one. In present moment, there cannot be any wanting. There cannot be any next. There cannot be any past. All gone. And that means the biggest of the problems you've overcome. Okay. So, any questions about this morning's lesson? Is that quite clear? You know what to do? But don't force it. If you feel really tired, go and take a break. Yeah?
I understand about being present. Does that mean you should be setting goals?
Yes. No goal weekend. No goal week. For the whole week today, no goals.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant. Have a nice free time. We set so many goals in our life, and it just tortures us. So this is a goal-free meditation retreat. Then it's no failure. You can really relax. Yes.
If we're in the present moment and we're getting away from the future and everything, how do we get driven to the next point?
You don't get driven to the next point. You're at the next point already. Well, you don't. I think it just happens automatically. Just so look, we always think that we're driving the vehicle. After a while, we find out we're not. It's on automatic pilot. So you don't have to do anything. It's actually much better when you get out of the way. You're the troublemaker. I'm the troublemaker. I'm the fool. So there's all these examples. So we all know that, you know, when the traffic lights go out at the intersections, the traffic flows much more freely when it's not controlled. You know, people give and take, and they sort of manage to get through. So many times you've been stuck at a red light, there's no traffic coming in the opposite direction at all. And you have to wait. And if there weren't traffic lights, you know, it is sensible enough, you can go through. And the same in Jerusalem a few years ago. I've got the article in my room back in the monastery over the road, that there was, the doctors went on strike in all the hospitals in Jerusalem for about 3 or 4 weeks. And the result of that was the death rate plummeted. It was true. You're a doctor. So when the doctors weren't at work, you know, people were much more healthy. Interesting. But it was done then. The report was quite clear. The death rate plummeted when the doctors went on strike. Obviously, there's many things involved in that, but there's an interesting story there behind it. So you find that, you know, when you don't try and make the next thing happen, life goes far more smoothly, especially on this retreat. You don't have to do anything. That's why the food is all organized for you, you know, the sort of the facilities. It's great. You don't have to do anything in this place. You don't have to come for the talks. You know, I won't sort of go to your room and drag you and throw you out. We haven't got a torture cell, you know, underground. We haven't actually told her where that is yet, have we? This is totally where you're totally respected and free. So just sit still, just see what happens. Maybe what you might have been saying was to go on to the next stage of meditation. You don't never go on to the next stage of meditation. You go in to the next stage of meditation. So the next stage of meditation is right in the middle of the stage you're on right now. So you always go into this moment. Right in this moment, right now, is the jhanas, enlightenment, everything. You just need to go deeper into it. And to go deeper into it, you stay here. And quite naturally you go in. So this whole journey of meditation especially happens in spite of you. You're just sitting there and it all happens to you. The old simile is you get on the aircraft, and as soon as you board the aircraft, you put on your seatbelt, it takes off, and once the takeoff is completed, you can take your seatbelts off, all these flight attendants come. And this is like flying on Buddha Air. And on Buddha Air, you're just sitting here, and this flight attendant comes and says, "Madam, do you want some present moment awareness, please?" And say, "Yes, thank you very much." So they give you present moment awareness. You don't even have to go running for it. And a few minutes later, they bring you the second course of silence. And a few minutes later, they bring you the breath, and then the delightful breath. And then they come up to you and say, "Special because it's Chinese New Year, we have jhana for you all today. So do you want some jhana today, first, second, third or fourth?" "Yeah, last time I had first. This is my second today." And so they give you, "Here's jhana, madam." And then you're just sitting there enjoying your jhana, and then someone else comes up and says, "Oh, we've got enlightenment. Do you fancy enlightenment today?" No, maybe not. No, okay. Everything gets served to you. You don't have to go seeking anything. If you're going on an aircraft, you just sit down there. And people bring you all the food and the drinks and everything else. That's what it's like in meditation. You sit absolutely still, do nothing, and these things come to you. You go running after them, you never find them. You sit still, and they come to you. Make sense? Okay, so just sit down, shut up, and do nothing. Very good. Okay, so any more questions, please put them on a piece of the paper for this evening. Now we have a time just to do absolutely nothing. So see how good you can be doing nothing, or nothing doing. For those who want interviews, there's interviews available. Put your name on the list, and that interviews will be outside of the office. And for everyone else, remember, well, the time right now is... now minutes to now, on the nowth day of the nowth month, 2000 and now. So please enjoy yourself. And you don't need to look at the clock. You will know when it's 11 o'clock and time for lunch. So just enjoy. Enjoy this morning. If you feel like sitting, sit. If you feel like walking, walk. If you feel like sleeping, sleep. Just be kind to your body and mind. Present moment awareness, silence. Yes. When you write down the time, make sure you write down the time now. And when that time comes up, now. Okay, so otherwise you'll all come at the same time and it'll be impossible. Okay, you got me there.